हरिः ॐ सहना भवतु सहना भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासदि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Three, methodology and sources of reference for Tattva Sandarbha, 27 and 28. That means verses 27 and 28,
correct? Correct.
Yes, okay. Summary. In Anuchedas 27 and 28, Srila Jiva Goswami discusses his methodology. He says that the principal object of study in the Sandarbhas are texts of the Bhagavatam, and that he will choose verses and explain them. Explain them carefully, considering the systematic intent of the whole Bhagavatam, and the immediate and extended contexts of the verses. Each sandarbha deals with a different main topic. And within those main topics, Srila Jiva systematically deals with relevant secondary topics. Thus he chooses, by topic, the Bhagavatam verses to be considered. Text 27, 27.1. Therefore, this investigation concentrates on Srimad Bhagavatam, carefully reconciling its various statements with the texts that precede and follow them in order to ascertain what is the highest good in life truly is. With this aim, in this work forming six sandarbhas, the introductory sentences in each anucheda serve the function of sutras. The quotations from Srimad Bhagavatam are the scriptural text under consideration, and Sridhar Swami's explanation of the Bhagavatam serves as our primary commentary. Okay, so now having basically up to this point established the importance of Bhagavatam, right? So that Dao Bhagavatam will be. Then he's explaining now how he will deal with this. Now, it's like he said, as you're taking the verse, that, you know, the major verse that he's there, but also the context that it's in. What's before that, what's after that, you know, what are the direct meanings, what are indirect meanings, all these different elements are there. Because many times, if you take something out of context, because words have a variety of meanings, that's why they're be able to be used, right, in so many ways. Because there's a limited amount of words. I mean, we'll say, well, how many words are there? And we'll say, well, look at the dictionary. You know, here there's, I mean, one of those fat dictionaries, they have something like, okay, it's 1 million something, or it's a couple of million, you know, these bigger dictionaries. Others have hundreds of thousands. But technically, there's only probably about a few thousand words. It just depends on the endings that you put. But technically, there's only a few thousand words. So that these few thousand words can work in an unlimited aspect, then that's the point. So you have to see the context. Otherwise, you can take something that Prabhupada said, you know, it's just like, let's say, doing that, you know, that's all right, you know, but this would be the more, you know, standard and more Krishna conscious. So then you just take that one sentence. Yes, that's all right. See, Prabhupada says, this is great, it's fabulous, we can all do this. Right? So that's the whole point that he's making, is you have to see the context. Because otherwise, if you don't see the context, it won't actually get something solid. Okay, and then making six sandarbhas, then they'll each have a main, theme. Right? Is that the... That's the thing. Topic. Okay, yes. Like that. And then in the Anucheda, he's saying that the beginning introductory sentences in each Anucheda serve as the function of sutras. So the sutras, then they give the exact what's going on, you know, in a shortened form. Then from that explanation of the verses and everything, he brings out the meanings. But then you get this exact. Because that's always very important. Like, you know, that it means when we're going through with our studies, then in the beginning you have something that, that shows what's going to happen. You know, I mean, the general tendency is that you start something and then you build it up and then you slowly, slowly reveal what it is you're doing. And then it's like, you know, good, clean, intellectual fun, right? But so the style that we're using where we start off with exactly what's going to happen, you know, like that. So you know what it is. It's not about enthusing you in the way of, you know, something different and new, like a trailer in a movie or something like that. This is exactly what's happening. And then from that, then as it goes through and it's explained, then you can appreciate the unfolding of the of that understanding and logic and everything like that. Does this make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. So yes.
Right.
Yes.
What's the main
Preeti, that I know. Tattva. Tattva is within the sambandha aspect is establishing praman, right? Because in the dasa mool, then you have sambandha abhideya and prayojan, but it must be established on praman, on evidence. So it establishes what is the evidence, because the whole thing is a study of Bhagavatam. And then why Bhagavatam? Why not something else? You know, because you could just have, yeah, we're just taking a book and we're doing a study on it. So it comes out like this. But why the sandarbhas are, like you could say, the study, you know, is because the Bhagavatam is the book, right? I mean, there's other ideas of what's the book, but this is the book, right? You know, this is the book. So he's established that if the Veda, it means the Vedas are the book. But the point is to understand the Vedas, you have to have some kind of a commentary or explanation. So that explanation then is in the Itihasas and Puranas. Now, of those, then Bhagavatam is the superior, because it's directly about pure devotional service. While the other Puranas will bring out other topics, the Satvik will relate them to Hari, but not necessarily bring out directly the element, or constantly or consistently, the aspect of pure devotion. So that puts it as the superior Vedic work. And then the Sandarbha being an analytical study of it, then that becomes, you know, your best studies. In other words, you're reading through and then you're also studying it. So this is, you know, the study. Right?
So. Thematic study.
Not even thematic, because the it means you do, I mean, the modern thing, you'll call it thematic. But the important thing is that the themes are established by the acharyas. Otherwise, if we look, we'll see so many things. And, you know, do you put it together this way? Do you put it together that way? There's so many different ways, you know. But the acharyas, they have chosen the themes. Yeah, so that way, then, that's the thematic study. So it's important that it's always on the, what did we say? What was that mandala we used yesterday?
Tatparya Nirnaya.
Yeah, Tatparya Nirnaya. Because that's you're bringing out the. How did he translate that?
Well, Tatparya means like the intention or the meaning.
Okay,
and
the intention.
Nirnaya is like the conclusive determination.
Okay, so conclusively determining the intent of, you know, the author.
Yeah.
So that's basically what we're doing. Also, it's the course is known along the Amnaya Tattva Niryas, that it's the same thing, the Niryas, bringing out what is coming from Amnaya, the Parampara. Like, add the knowledge is coming down through the Parampara. So that's its purpose. That's what it does. So that's always why we always have these parallel courses. One is the study of the work itself, and one is the study of how the acharyas, then they are giving us understanding of this work, right? You know, but it means the acharyas giving that understanding is happening in both when you're going through. What's that fancy word?
Siriyatam.
And then what was the other one?
Elucidatory.
Yeah, and then the elucidatory. It means you still have the authority of the acharyas and how they bring it out. But the difference is one is just going just through from one verse to the next, while the other may pull verses from everywhere to show that common theme, you know, that common point that is being made. My God. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because otherwise, you're presenting something, it takes stages to get to the fullest understanding. But now once it's been studied, then you can look at it from these different, take one of those points, and then you're not looking at it from how you developed it one after another, you're looking at it in its full form. Right? So, and the nice thing in the Vedic is there is no children's knowledge. Right? You know, in kind of modern education, you have things you teach children when you get to be an adult. You don't use it, you know, except for maybe for the next generation of the kids. You know, like, you know, the wheels on the bus go around and around, stuff like that. You know, it doesn't have any work in an adult society. Mm-hmm. Right, but in the Vedic society, is what you teach in the beginning is just those simpler aspects that you can catch, mm-hmm. or what you teach to the younger children is those simpler aspects they can catch. Mm-hmm. Then it builds up from there. So then, even though it was simple, it doesn't mean that it doesn't have a very important element. So when you're looking at the whole picture, you know, the complete all the aspects of one point, then it broadens the understanding. So that's your vichara, seeing all the different aspects and everything like that. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So the methodology is very important because it's very specific. Mm. Right? And so then, you know, as best as we can appreciate and understand, we, for the academy's approach, is to use these traditional methods of study. So they may be quite different or unique to what has been experienced before. But the point is, but the point is that with time, as the movement expands, as you know, as this 10,000 years unfolds, this will become more. I mean, in other words, the Vedic cultural approaches will be more standard, because the only people that really care about the modern is the first generation. They're the only ones that may have an attachment. The second generation couldn't care less. Third is even less than that. You know what I'm saying? So sometimes the first generation's great emphasis on the need to maintain contemporary culture is basically kind of just their own weakness, or their own distraction. It's not actually important for the mission, though it makes it sound like it. But the point is as one goes with time, there'll be those who are quite comfortable with this. And as Narad Muni pointed out, to Vyasadeva, right? Because Vyasadeva's whole point was we don't want to disturb the minds of the general mass because they may reject, right? So in this case, reject Krishna consciousness because the approach or presentation is different from what they're used to, right? But Narad Muni pointed out that no, you have to present what is the actual point. And he said, but then who will take it? And Narad Muni says, no, there's always discriminating persons. So those discriminating persons, those are the ones you want to take. Otherwise, if you just go only for the mass so you don't disturb them, then you'll get like what Vyasadeva ended up with, a very nicely established, pious Hindu culture. And that's it. You know, everybody has their own philosophy, their own direction they're going in it, because it's a huge monster banyan tree. There's plenty of space for everybody. You know, so as a culture, it accommodates everybody. But his point was, it's nice, you've established a culture, but what about the philosophy? The real philosophy of pure devotion. You know, does that make sense? Yes.
I was giving a class to some Hindus in Calcutta last week, and they were asking about how to transfer from one body to the next, and they kept going back to the piety and nice facilities. I tried to explain to them about going back to Godhead. They wouldn't have it. They kept going back. So if I do pious work, I get nice facility next life. They just...
No, they say yes, but the point is but that it's temporary, and you have to die, and then go through the whole problem again.
But they didn't hear that part. It was really fun.
You know, it's 20 years of growing up before you can really use the facilities. You know, now that's a waste of time. What would you say if you had 20 years you couldn't use the facilities, right? You go back to Godhead, but immediately the moment you get there, then, you know.
So I could get born in the West?
Yeah, you could. And then after the West, then generally there's another, you know, seven planetary systems below this one to accommodate, you know, all your desires and all that. And there's plenty of spots on this planet also. There's animals in the West also, right? Yeah. So that's the point, is they just hear what they want to hear. So that's why Narad Muni say, you do this, and then those who are able to discriminate, they'll take it. Mm. Because the point is to get people to go back to Godhead, that's the real thing. And then if everybody else is happy to stay here, then, nice, they'll give them another few kalpas, and then they'll start to get sick of it, then they'll listen to it. Okay, so therefore this pratigya element, the quotations, okay, and Sridhar Swami's explanation, the Bhagavatam services are primary commentary, so things have to be in line with Sridhar Swami, because Lord Chaitanya made that point very clear, right? So he's come and do that. Now, these acharyas bring out things that are very, he reveals so many amazing things, but they also continue in that same line. So there's nothing contradictory. This text describes the formal organization of the anuchetas of the sandarbhas, which resembles the logical structure of the Vedanta Sutras. Okay, you have subject, right, which is a Vedanta Sutras, you have the sutra, sadsandarbhas, introductory statement by Jiva Goswami. Right? Text under consideration, Vishayavakya, verse from Shruti, verse from Bhagavatam, and meaning, Tatparya. Bhashya Antika, e.g. Sri Bhashya, Brahma Sutra Bhashya, commentary by Jiva Goswami, based on Sridhar Madhva Ramanuja. So it's the same thing. So therefore we're following, if Vyasadeva wrote the essence, or this, the essence of the Bhagavatam in Vedanta Sutra, but the problem is not clear, Jiva Goswami is following that same thing, because if you want to make a logical presentation, you're not going to get better than how Vyas did it, right? Like that. So the Vedanta Sutra is an amazing organization of logical presentation. You just don't get better than that when it comes to logic, right? And so because we see all these great acharyas, they don't say we have to change it or adjust it, or no, that's not good enough. Everybody's comfortable with that. So it's done well. But because of its terseness, right, which Narad Muni pointed out, and Vyasadeva understands himself. Therefore, the need is to expand that. Right? So then the Bhagavatam does that. And we see that he does the same thing when he does his grammar. Because the terseness is there in the Patanjali Sutras. But the problem is the explanation and other things. It's like the sutras are very small. Because they say, well, there's 10,000 sutras in Patanjali. Right? Technically, there's only 3,000. But there's 7,000 of commentary to explain those 3,000. Rajiva Goswami gives 3,000 and they explain themselves. So that's the point. So they're not as terse. They're expanded. They're bringing out the points, making it very clear. So that's his point, is how to create clarity by proper, exact, not just by, so much talk, but exact explanations. So it's very scientific, but not to the point of the, like he was saying, with Patanjali, then there's this, he said, if in contemplating a sutra, he's already got it down to the essence, exactly how many syllables will explain what he wants. If he can, with contemplation, figure out a way to shorten the sutra by one syllable, he said he's as happy as if he just got the news that his wife just had a boy, like that. He would be that happy, right? So he was quite a happy man. As he mentioned, in one of his sutras, it just says, ak. That's it.
He must have been ecstatic.
Yeah, but you'll have to have so many commentaries to explain what ak means. Right? Does that mean? Like that. So therefore, being himself such a great logician, great writer, great scholar, then he's using the same thing. So the style of writing is like the Vedanta Sutras, and the commentary and his explanations are in line with Sridhar Swami. Like that. And what he's heard from Rupa and Sanatana. right?
Yes.
Right.
Yes. What is the meaning of Anucheda?
Anucheda means basically you're taking a point and you're establishing it by using the five angas or panchanga nyaya. So it's that run of sutras that follows that path. So it may be very short. It may be five sutras, one for each, or it may be more extended. So, but the Anucheda is like a Vedanta Sutra, generally quite short. Like I think in the first pada, which I think is 30 sutras, there's at least, I think, three Anuchedas. Right?
Can we say it's like a section?
It's a section, but the section is based on the presentation of the logic.
Yes.
It gives the thesis, right. The explanations, you know, I mean, the reasoning explanations, you know, trying to wrap it up and then giving conclusions. So then they all do that, and all the connections and everything like that. So that will be an anucheda, from what I understand. Is that?
Just here he uses the word anukarma.
Adikarma.
I think it's interchangeable with.
Adikarma. I think there's so many of them, because Sanskrit is like, they have names, a lot of synonyms. Someone was telling me that Sanskrit has huge amount of synonyms. And so then that makes it very, very, one can be very exact in logical explanations, but it also gives such variety and that in poetics. So one literary person was saying, I think it was a Sanskritist who was saying, English has a somewhat of a similar kind of aspect because it has so many synonyms. So it can be used both ways. It just doesn't have necessarily exact vocabulary for describing certain aspects of transcendence. So only those things that they've actually worked with, and they have these fabulous words for. You know, basically they're all Latin. Like that. But other than that, then they're... Okay, like that.
But is it some connection with when you study Bhagavatam, there is different section in every chapter?
You could say like that. It gives one thing, but it's also connected to the previous and it's taking you to the next.
Yes.
So it has that kind of element, yes.
I was just remembering that in English, I think someone commented, there's over 40 different synonyms for how to cheat someone. You can swindle, you can hustle, you can deceive.
and the list is growing.
Which is unique among languages.
No, probably if you check in Europe, that there's a particular community famous in this direction. There's probably quite a few words also. Either that or because it's business, they just have, you know, just like that. You know, every language has its uniqueness, you know, so. You know, like we were saying, I heard in Gaelic that there's 40 words for green, the variety of green. So it means like all here, you look here, all just in this area, you see so many kinds of green. Each one of those has actually a word. You know?
Green with family. What kind of green?
Yeah, and then you can know how. A fresher envy. No, that's an old envy. In Vedanta Sutras, Vyasadeva groups short, complete arguments into anukaranas of one or more sutras. The sutras themselves usually resolve doubts about the correct understanding of particular Upanishadic statements. These Vishayavakyas, or Shruti texts under consideration, are not given along with the sutras. The only means of determining which Shruti text they correspond to is to consult the testimony of authorities. For this purpose, the founder Acharya of each Vedanta school wrote a principal commentary, Bhashya, with their followers writing any number of some commentaries, Tikas. Srila Jiva Goswami begins his Anuchedas with his own introductions, which serve the functions of sutras. He then quotes a Bhagavatam verse, or sometimes a few, as the Vishaya Vakya, to be discussed. He then comments on the meaning, drawing primarily from Sridhar Swami's commentary on Bhagavatam, the Bhavartha Deepika. 27.1 continued. Srila Sridhar Swami is a perfect Vaishnava, but to entice the Advaitavadis, nowadays prominent all over the central part of the country and elsewhere, to become absorbed in the glories of the Supreme Lord, he mixed into his writings traces of their theories. When Sri Swami Charana's commentary agrees with the conclusions of pure Vaishnava philosophy, we cite it verbatim. Srila Baladev Vidyabhushan comments. Sridhar Swami is considered a Vaishnava because he states in his commentaries that the Lord's vibhutis, abodes, qualities, and forms, as well as the bodies of his associates, are eternal, and that bhakti to Bhagawan is the most attractive type of liberation. Sometimes he writes Mayavad ideas, but it should be understood that its purpose is to lure the Mayavadis to bhakti by offering bait on a hook. Similarly, pure Vaishnava philosophy accepts the non-contrary parts of Sankhya. In that way, parts of Srila Sridhar Swami which follow pure Vaishnava ideas are quoted.
Right. So the aspect is because Achintavaita Veda Tattva has the Advaita aspect. So by throwing that out and not putting it in context of the other aspects, it would appear that it's impersonal. Right? So in other words, the texts that aren't like that, as they are the quote, the texts that are like that, then you'll have to give the proper meaning. So you won't quote them exactly.
This notion of Sridhar Swami, quote, luring the Mayavadis, indicates the historical context and target audience of the Bhavartha Deepika. Sripad Shankaracharya indirectly referred to Sri Srimad Bhagavatam in his Govindastika and Yamunastika, and in this way attracted some of his followers to study the work. Baladev Vidyabhushana explained Shankar's covert devotion and reference for Srimad Bhagavatam. Quote, in discharge of destruction, I, a devotee of Vishnu, have followed his order in destroying the real conclusion by explaining the Upanishads in a certain way. If I misinterpret his very dear Bhagavatam, however, he will be angry with me. Thus, I cannot misinterpret Bhagavatam, but I will be deprived of the great happiness, prema, understood to be the highest goal. Therefore, I will touch upon it a little.
Taking some time to write that.
Yes. For example, within Shankar's devotional poetry is mentioned Krishna's 10th canto Leelas of stealing the gopis' clothing and revealing to an aghast Mother Jashoda's universal form. In order to attract the impersonal Shankarite sannyasis to the path of devotion, Sridhar Swami wrote a mixed Bhagavatam commentary, like a fisherman using a worm to conceal a sharp hook. Hence, the Acharyas reveal that, despite superficial appearances, Sridhar Swami was no more a Mayavadi than Shankaracharya. He is, in fact, the topmost devotional scholar of Srimad Bhagavatam, footnote 7. Sridhar Swami's paramount authority is illuminated in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Antya Lila, chapter 7. Quote, in my commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam, Vallabha Bhatta said, I have refuted the explanations of Sridhar Swami. I cannot accept his explanations. Whatever Sridhar Swami reads, he explains according to the circumstances. Therefore, he is inconsistent in his explanations and cannot be accepted as an authority. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu smilingly replied, one who does not accept the Swami, husband, as an authority, I consider a prostitute. After saying this, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu became very grave. All the devotees present derived great satisfaction from hearing this statement. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Antya Lila, 7.1.13-16. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, you are both a greatly learned scholar and a great devotee. Wherever there are two such attributes, there cannot be a mountain of false pride. You have dared criticize Sridhar Swami, and you have begun your own commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam, not accepting his authority. That is your false pride. Sridhar Swami is the spiritual master of the entire world, because by his mercy we can understand Srimad Bhagavatam. I therefore accept him as a spiritual master. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Ancha Lila 7, 131 to 133. Srila Prabhupada explains, Srimad Bhagavatam has many tikas, or commentaries, following the parampara system. But Sridhar Swami's is first. The commentaries of all the other acharyas follow his. The parampara system does not allow one to deviate from the commentaries of the previous acharyas. But, depending upon the previous acharyas, one can write beautiful commentaries. However, one cannot defy the previous acharyas. The false pride that makes one think that he can write better than the previous acharyas will make one's comments faulty. At the present moment, it has become fashionable for everyone to write in his own way. But such writing is never accepted by serious devotees. Because of false pride, every scholar and philosopher wants to exhibit his learning by interpreting the Shastras, especially the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, in his own way. This system of commenting in one's own way is fully condemned by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Therefore, he says, Artha Vyasta, Likhani Se. Commentaries written according to one's own philosophical way are never accepted. No one will appreciate such commentaries on the revealed scriptures. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Antya Lila 7, 134, purport. So there's also the aspect of one is the false, the main thing is his pride and all that, because otherwise if the pride wasn't there, then Krishna can reveal how it's understood. But we see is from his line, then there'll be a particular philosophy that will be there, that I know he would be Vishuddhadvait. Right? So they just have a specific aspect. But what he hasn't understood is just that you're taking the Vishuddhadvait, but you're presenting it without showing the Vaishnava conclusion as a point. And then they'll read, and then you'll get into that, because he does explain things. So there must be some method that he's using as they explain, like bait on the hook. Right? As they throw that out, so they'll think, oh, this is a Dvaita, but then as they go, then it becomes Vishuddhadvaita. Excuse me, Vishuddhadvaita. Right? So then it will bring them to that, but because he's taken through the logic, then doing that again and again, slowly, then they'll become, purified or convinced. So it's a method. But for Lord Chaitanya, because we're dealing with the original, the Achinta Veda Veda Tattva, so you won't see any problem in it. It's just a matter of some parts of the commentaries are direct, some are not. That's all. So it's not a problem. Okay, 47. 27.2. We base our explanation of certain Bhagavatam verses on comments given by Sridhar Swami and on other texts. Footnote 8. For example, Jiva Goswami occasionally cites Sridhar Swami's commentary on Vishnu Purana, the Swaprakash, the Swaprakasha, Atma Prakash. Is there more of this or this? Okay. Sometimes we base our explanation on statements from the exalted devotees of the Lord known as the Sri Vaishnavas. These Vaishnavas are famous throughout the Dravida Desh and in other regions, and the goddess Sri herself founded their Sampradaya. Right? So there's certain things they explain very nicely because they've gone in and they've dealt with all these schools very much. So the Sris, the Madhvas, then very exacting definition. So the point is if there's already a very excellent definition, there's no need to give a new one. So areas where further explanation or specific explanation are there, that's what will be written. Right? So the principal direction is given by Sridhar Swami, then the commentaries may come from that. Because we saw before when writing, they get into details of how, Brahman can't be the ultimate,
yeah.
In the way of that's where it is, or Brahman's this whole idea that Brahman is nirvishesh, right?
Yeah.
Like that, it can't be. So they get into very great detail about this. So it's already done. Why do you don't have to do it again?
Right? So that's the point. If something's very exact, like Chanakya, we quote Chanakya when it comes to Niti in that, he's thought about it, he's made it very exact. It's the perfect conclusion. Now, connect. All we have to do is connect that to Krishna. But as far as the tool of understanding what you're working with, no one gives a better definition than him. So therefore it's used. So when it comes to Niti, Niti means Chanakya. Right? So then it works like that. Yes?
I don't know if this came up in another discussion, but we were reading in Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's biography that he hired two pandits from South India, one from the Sri Sampradaya and one from the Madhva Sampradaya, to come here to Navadvip to teach his disciples for 2 years continuously about Tattva and how to defeat Mayavada philosophy.
Oh, yeah, no, didn't come up. Because that's all they do. I mean, I remember where we're visiting some Madhvas. All they talk about is defeating Mayavada. You know, it's as if that they're, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years ago, even though they're in the, you know, contemporary time. It's that whenever they're discussing something, that's all they talk about. They don't talk about anything else. But like the Shris means they have that side, but they also will talk about, you know, the festivals and other aspects of the philosophy. The Madhvas, they just talk about defeating Mayavada. You know, because they're so exact, because it's two. There's no one business. You know, so they're just all, yeah. So yeah, I could see that would be good.
Maybe we could do something similar.
Yeah.
It doesn't say whether he sent any of his scholars down there to teach them.
Oh, yeah.
That may have been, you know, and then we taught them. So. But it's generally, there's depends who you bring. They're quite... So I found more the Shris are appreciative than the Madhvas. Mm-hmm. In general. Though there are Madhvas there. It just depends how scholarly they are. Generally, the more scholarly, the more they appreciate. And the goddess Sri herself founded their sampradaya. Srimad Bhagavatam attests to the greatness of these devotees and affirms their numerical strength in South India and their reputation of Vaishnavas. Quote, in Kali Yuga there are indeed Vaishnavas scattered here and there, but they are especially abundant in the Dravida regions. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.5.38. So mentions that they'll expand a lot in the commentary to the Acharyas mentioned. The statements of the Sri Vaishnavas that we cite are certified by the authority of Sri Ramanuja Bhagavat Pada, whose opinions are found in the Sri Bhasya and his other work. Okay. According to Srila Baladeva, one of Sri Jiva Goswami's intentions with this verse is to state, quote, the explanations are not something imaginary that I have produced on my own. The commentary is based upon others' explanations. Right? So that they can't say it's just something new and, you know, who is he? He's a young guy like this. But it's that it's based on all these others. And so therefore, you know, one has to accept it as authority. 27.2 continues. Sometimes we simply follow the self-evident meaning of the original Bhagavatam texts, and sometimes we base our explanations on other authorities. We do not bother to elaborate, however, on the already well-known explanations of the Advaitavadis. Here the implication is that the Mayavada, although popular, only apparently explains the meanings of Shastra, and hence is not worthy of discussion. Sri Jiva does, however, intend to refute it. Because also, it's been refuted so nicely in Vedanta Sutra and other places like this. So it's not the main intent, right? It's not like, basically, you could say is these, you know, these other Bhashya, Sri Bhashya and Madhva's Bhashya, one of the main elements is defeating Mayavadis. Like that. But in the study of Bhagavatam, the main is establishing pure devotion. So in doing that, you have to remove the element of impersonalism. Mm-hmm. But that's not the most prominent focus. Text 28.
28.1. In this book, I also recite various statements from Shruti, the Puranas, and other scriptures, quoting the exact words I have seen in writing. I do this to provide evidence for my own ideas, rather than to verify what Srimad Bhagavatam is saying. Right? Sri Baladev comments. The author says, in the Sandarbhas, the statements I have taken from Shruti, he's being very humble there, using the small eye. You see, some devotees, they write like that, they don't use the capital I, they use the small. So this is the origin of it.
So either he's humble or I'm proud.
In the Sandarbhas, the statements I have taken from Shruti and Puranas are to prove the particular interpretations that I have shown in the Bhagavatam statement. Not to prove that the Bhagavatam statements are true, right? Because he's already established that the Bhagavatam statements establish the Veda. So they're not to, he doesn't have to, again, that's why in this Sandarbha, he's already established the prominence of the Bhagavatam. After that, he's just showing that these ideas, you know, have, you know, to bring out the basis of what he's saying. Since Bhagavatam is its own proof, being equivalent of Shruti, and being non-different from the Lord, right? You know, so then, you know, it stands on its own, yes.
Srinath Swami, he's considered to be in Shankara line?
No, he's in the Vishnu, I know, Vishnu Swami line. The same line as Vallabhabhatta. So he's thinking, he's writing a better commentary. See, it's not that he's in a different parampara, and that Sridhar Swami is not in, and therefore he's writing a different one. He's in the same line, and I understand. So that's why it's more significant what Lord Chaitanya is saying. Because for him, he is a previous Acharya. And then in our line, even though, you know, we're in a different line, we're still accepting him as previous Acharya. So then that shows even more, the more proper understanding of Lord Chaitanya and the less understanding of Vallabhabhatta in this case. You understand? Because if it was the other way around, then, you know, you could say it's like that. Of course you're going to say that because he's in your line. But he's not in our line. But the point is he's Vaishnava. So that means that it's in the line. Because all it is that the knowledge of the spiritual world, which is just one knowledge, is coming down through four different lines. You know, just who spoke it first to who, that's all. But in the spiritual world, as Bhaktivinoda points out, there's only one philosopher. Laughing therapy, yoga, laughing yoga. Is that a... There's a bunch of jackals upstairs.
Maybe that's what.
So the kids are laughing, and the jackals are laughing also. So it's all happening.
Maybe that's what jackals are doing. Yoga laughing.
Yeah, they could be doing yoga.
Right? Shabaksidanta Sarasvati, that could just confirm exactly the same point. Vallabhabhatta is the same line as.
Yes, that I know of. They're in the Vishnu Swami line. So that means, so there might be Vishuddha Dwait, so you have the Advait aspect, but it's purified Advait. So therefore, he'll start, I mean, in some places, start with the Advaita aspect, and then as he continues, it'll bring it into the actual proper understanding of Advait. You know, and that means, in other words, the relationship with the Lord, you know, the oneness like this, because you can only have a relationship with something common or something oneness, right? But to act in that relationship, you have to have two. Therefore, Madhva emphasizes that aspect. Mm-hmm. Right? In other words, his is the practical, how you're going to apply yourself. The Lord and you are two, so therefore you have to worship. Mm-hmm. Well, they're pointing out, no, you and the Lord have that oneness aspect. That's why you have a relationship. Mm-hmm. So it's a difference on establishing the relationship, and the other is on applying the relationship. Mm-hmm. So they're both correct. So this idea that the acharyas disagree with each other is not the, you know, and then Ramanuja, the specialness of the oneness, you know, so that means that, because they have a little bit more of a sweeter aspect, you know, like that.
You know, that's why much of the time they appreciate what we do, or we appreciate how they do festivals. Much of the time you took that asset, because they make festivals very, very nice. They engage the maximum amount of people when they have a festival. Like the Lord goes out on a palanquin. Sometimes there's 50 to 100 people carrying that palanquin. It's so big. Like that. You know, it's as big as this, the footprint of this building, some of their palanquins. Like that. So it's just bamboo, you know, just so many bamboos, and there's just like 100 Brahmins carrying it. And these aren't, you know, little guys. These are the big, big guys, you know. You know, like that. You know, the 12 to 15 Italy Wallers. You know, and that's me. You know, those guys. And they get out there, and they, you know, it's serious. Sometimes we okay, then we were down to, okay. So in other words, he's making it clear is that we're not proving Bhagavatam. He's just using it to prove his statement on Bhagavatam.
Yes.
28.1 continued. 28.1, oh, okay. Someone had looked back at 27.2 continued.
Yeah.
28.1 continued. Sometimes I have not seen the original scriptures of which I cite passages. Because before he says this, generally he's citing by he sees it. It means here's the scripture, he's just lifting it from there and writing it. Right? Such citations I borrow from various works of Sri Madhvacharya Charana, including Sri Bhagavat Tatparya, Mahabharata Tatparya, and Brahma Sutra Bhashya. Because he, Madhva somehow or another, because of the time, because he goes back before, so there were things available. Like he's already saying that it's starting to disappear, right? So there was more available when Madhvacharya was there, right? And, you know, there would have been more before, you know, the Buddhists and the Mayavadis, right? So it's just, you know, then it comes. And then if they haven't finished it off, you know, then, of course, the Christians come along and burn it down. So whatever it is, there's less available than there was, right? So... therefore, he has to rely on, because the Acharya has quoted it, Madhva can't be wrong. Therefore, then that's the authority for using, even though you haven't seen it.
Yes.
Yes.
Right? That's the point.
Yes.
Sri Madhva is the spiritual master of the Tattvavada school. He is an old standard authority. Although he originally belonged to the disciplic line directly descending from Srimad Shankaracharya, he separated himself from Shankara's school and joined the Vaishnava party. His special Vaishnava doctrine has been preached widely. Among his disciples and later followers, renowned in South India and elsewhere, are Sri Vijayadwaj Tirtha, Brahmanya Tirtha, and Vyasa Tirtha, all eminent scholars of the Vedas and their purports. I think Vijayadwaj Tirtha is seven generations after. And so because there was a seeming confusion on some points, then he made it very clear. So when the Madhvas talk about, you know, that the previous Acharyas, he's always a prominent one, because he made it very clear that how to understand Madhvacharya. And 82. And so Sri Madhva says in his Mahabharata Tatparya, quote, "It is by the mercy of the Vedanta Sutras that I have correctly understood other scriptures, having studied various kinds of books found in various places. In this work, the opinions I write agree with the views of Bhagavan Vyas, the Supreme Lord Narayana in person, as he has expressed them in his Mahabharata and other works." End quote. Mahabharata Tatparya Nirnaya 2.7.8. It is useful to know that Madhvacharya cited Shruti texts such as the Chaturveda Shika, as well as portions of the Garuda and other Puranas that are no longer available anywhere. And Samhitas like the Mahasamhita, and Tantras like the Tantra Bhagavat and Brahma Tarka. Because they're all handwritten. That's when then available means they're handwritten. So there's just, like I mentioned, that one devotee was telling me that he met one gentleman and he had his own private library and so many of these handwritten texts. And he said one of them that he saw, you know, the person showed him, it was a text on what particular combination of the modes creates exactly the particular sense. Like, you know, what makes it somebody has a longer nose, a shorter nose? And it tells her exactly what it does. You know, by adding this mode, the nose will go like this or like that, and the ear like this or like that. You know, so you can show all the 8,400,000 species of life, how you get them by what combination of the modes. You know, but who's ever heard of that? You know, it was seen in the handwritten copy, and that was in the 80s. So who knows if, you know, the bugs haven't eaten it, or what, you know, his relatives threw him out because they took up space, or, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the point is that's how everything was. It means now, because there's printed books, they print thousands and thousands of that, but Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his time, which is not that long ago, he spent 7 years to find a copy of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. Right? So in all his travels going around, it took him 7 years to find a copy. And then getting that copy, he then copied that. And basically, that's how we have, you know, so we take it that, yeah, there's Bhagavatams everywhere, Chaitanya Charitamrita, so it's like it's common. But actually, it wasn't like that before. So these books can easily, by the, you know, the arrangement of the illusory energy, they can be manifest or disappear. You know, so that's why they have to be again revealed. So we say, oh, it disappeared. It's not that Chaitanya Charitamrita it became so much, then it's re-established. So you can, Bhaktivinoda Thakur re-established it. Yes.
The government of Bengal had a thing where they wanted to preserve the culture and heritage. And they did that by threatening people to fine them if they threw out any original text they had. So what they immediately did was throw them in the Ganges, because they didn't want them to know about the text so that they would be fined. So it had kind of the opposite effect. This is from the Bhaktivedanta Research Center in Calcutta. They had a lot of help. People, they just didn't know that it had any value, and they just didn't want to get a fine because they didn't have
any.
Why
didn't they just turn it in? Why didn't the government offer money for it?
Yeah, exactly.
Everybody would have brought it in.
Exactly.
No, we'll give you 100 rupees per manuscript. You know, you'll just see your manuscripts coming out of your ear. You know, like the British, you know. They wanted them to drink tea, so they paid them to drink tea, you know. I forget what it was. They'd pay them a paisa or something like that to drink tea. So then people would start drinking tea. Then they slowly started getting less and less until it was just free. And then they started charging for it. Yeah, no, that's what they did. Okay. Sri Balaji Vidyabhushan remarks that Madhvacharya's name is mentioned here in the plural case as a sign of respect. The Acharya is hailed thus. In an incarnation of Vayu, omniscient and powerful, he mastered the 14 vidyas in 14 moments. 14 vidyas, footnote 9. The four Vedas, six Angas, and Mimamsa Purana, Nyaya, and Dharma Shastra. So this last part is that you have the Veda, the four Vedas, the Vedangas is the six Angas, and then this last one is called Upangas. Like that. So there's four. Yeah, those are the... So Mimamsa means philosophy. Mimamsa basically means, what's your interpretation or hermeneutics of the Vedic verses? Like that. So ours is Vedanta. Right, Gautama's is Nyaya, like that. These are the, so that way you get six schools.
And what is
Tantra? Tantra is generally where you're giving. It's more based on the metaphysical, from what I can understand. You know, the metaphysical combinations, much of the time on the elements themselves and all these different kind of aspects. So it tends to be, it's generally very technical, metaphysical kind of rituals. I mean, that's the effect. What exactly, I don't know. But the point is you have tantras in all three modes. So your Shaiva tantra, Devi tantras, those would be in the mode of ignorance. Then for the demigods, that would be in the mode of passion. Then like what we have, Gautamiya tantra, then these are sattvics, so they're about Radha and Krishna. So we use, our worship has a lot more of the tantra element, more than, let's say, the Shris. There's just much more, with more Vedic, you know, the Pancharatra kind of side.
Because Pancharatra is a combination between Vedic and Tantric, like that. But depending on the proportion and where they apply and all these things, so then it will be more strong that way. So ours has more. So it's just like we think of the Shris as very, their rituals are very elaborate. But actually the rituals are very simple. They just repeat them many, many, many times. That's their elaborateness. Well, ours, we do this ritual once, but the ritual itself is way more. I mean, not just a touch more. Like they install something by two movements, right? And then they start to worship. But we just, that opening part, the sticks, then we use the karanyas, I mean the anganyas, you know, and then some more mudras. So it's just, they once, because they ask about how, there happened to be an installation in Bangalore, so the Shris were invited, and we were invited. So both were actually going on at once. You know, us, for we'd be satisfied, and the Shris, so that everybody around would be satisfied. So then they ask, well, what is the basis of your work? What do you use? And so they gave him a Gotamiya Tantra, and they looked at that, handed it back, and no more questions. You know, so we thought you guys were just like simple. No, it's like, you know, it's like it's over their heads. So, in 14 moments. Okay, so he mastered the 14 vidyas in 14 moments. So each one of these, because people study one of them their whole life, and you know, then they're kind of known as a master. In the, you know, because generally you hear the more contemporary writers, you know, somebody is, you know, expert in Ayurveda, or someone's expert in astronomy, or someone's expert in some other aspect, like that. But he used all 14, and he did it 14 moments. So, you know, 11 moments in a second, so, you know, like that. You know, so 1 1/3 seconds, and he did it again. Madhvacharya's library was said to have no equal. Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan explains that while crossing the length and breadth of India, defeating others, he simultaneously collected countless little-known scriptures in order to elucidate the Vaishnava understanding of Vedanta theology. Of course, in Madhvacharya's time, the 12th century, travel was on foot and books were copied by hand. Sometimes temples and libraries forbid him from copying books. Fortunately, Sri Madhva is also known for his photographic memory. Like that. That's how Navanyaya came to Navadvipa, because there was one of the devotees had been there. He had seen it, you know, because they'll teach it to you, but they won't give you a copy. So he heard everything. He knew everything. So then he just wrote it down. Like that. There's also this book on verses used by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. That's all because one brahmachari, he just had them all memorized. Otherwise, when somebody came up with the idea, then it's like, how are you going to do that? And he says, well, I know them all. You know, because he traveled with them, and that, so he knew every verse he did. It was like 3,000 verses. You know, so. Like that. Krishna's kind. So Madhvacharya was like that. So if they let him read it, then he could go back and just write it down. So it's done.
Fortunately, we don't have that problem with our study guides here. If no one registers for the course, then there's no chance of them remembering the whole thing.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Very slim chance.
Yes. Okay. He could read books and later reproduce them in entirety from memory. In this way, he amassed an immense library of great repute at his headquarters in Udupi. Unfortunately, it was destroyed by fire, and many of the books referenced in his writings were lost. In other words, so it was manifest at that time to do that, and then, you know, it was taken away. So these things happen. Just it's organized like that. But, so therefore, we quote him on it because he had the books. Whenever possible, Sri Jiva directly consults copies of the primary sources he cites. In some cases, the primary sources are missing. For example, of Madhvacharya's 33 compositions, more than 200 of the scriptures he refers to by name are no longer existent, or extant. Existent and extant are the same? Okay. In such cases, Jiva Goswami borrows citations from the works of Madhvacharya. Jiva Goswami insists that the authenticity of these references is irreproachable. To validate the Acharya's truthful nature, Baladeva Vidyabhushan quotes a traditional datum. Kumara Brahmacharyavan Naishtikoya Satya Tapo Nidhi Swapne Pyan Nritam Noche Cha. The person who is a lifelong celibate, an ocean of sense control and truth, does not speak falsely, even in dreams, right? Like that. So it's just, they remember everything. Because in the Vedic, when you're testing students, then the tradition is, because they learn the whole Veda, you teach them a whole Veda, like that. So that means Rig Veda will be 10,000 verses, Atharva Veda will be 8,000 verses, Sama Veda, Yajra is 8,000, Atharva is like between five and six, and the Sama is like one, between one and two, like that. It is that after you've tested them on the Veda, then they're given a like status. You know, one who knows perfectly, one who makes one mistake, one who makes two mistakes, up to 15 mistakes. You know, so that means it's memorized. So that means those thousands of verses are memorized. So in that they might make, and what mistake they're talking about here generally means you might get a swara wrong or a syllable wrong or the length of it wrong. You know, these kind of things. We're not talking about, you know, just missing out on whole sections. So that was your standard, you know. Kind of.
Was.
Yeah. Oh, it's standard. It's just it's a little hard to keep up.
I was reading, even the Western academics acknowledge that the oral transmission is much more faithful than written transmission. You're much more bound to make mistakes when copying things by hand.
Yes.
I think some Indologists would disagree, but they are very staunch on that. Yeah, depends, I guess, which scholarship.
It also depends upon what they're trying to establish.
Yeah, exactly.
The point is the whole. See, the thing is, according to the Western Academy, how can the oral tradition be superior when their whole point is the only evidence that they accept is written?
Yes.
So then they that's the whole.
The culture is as old as the oldest scripture they have found.
Yeah.
And before that, there was nothing.
Yeah.
So that's the theory.
Yeah. What to do?
What to do?
Therefore, publish or perish.
Yeah. Publish or don't exist at all.
Yes. Yeah, don't even exist. Yes, 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 yes.
I publish, therefore I...
Yes.
To publish,
yes.
Or not to publish, that is the question.
Yes. Having established Shabda Praman as the only independently valid means of knowledge, and having established Srimad Bhagavatam as the topmost form of Shabda Praman, here the Praman section of the Tattvasandarbha ends. In the following section, Srila Jiva Goswami begins discussing the Prameya, or what we come to know by resorting to the topmost Praman. So now that we've established, now we'll discuss the next section. So very clearly, so that's why he's saying how he's functioning, right? Because then that shows how the Praman is working. Prameya Khanda, 29-63:2-1. Defining the message of Srimad Bhagavatam by considering the realizations of Sukadev Goswami and Vyasadev, 29-49:2-1a. Understanding the realizations, 29-34. Summary of text 29. In the preceding Anuchedas, Srila Jiva Goswami compared and contrasted the Vedas, Vedanta, Itihasas, and Puranas, having demonstrated the authority of Srimad Bhagavatam as the topmost Praman, and having outlined in his methodology, Sri Jiva Goswami now begins his exposition of the science of Krishna consciousness on the basis of statements from Srimad Bhagavatam. He first presents a basic view of the science, touching each of the three major phases of realization in Krishna consciousness, Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana, by looking at Sutta Goswami's glorification of his guru, Srila Sukadev, in the second last chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam. This verse, 12:12:69, by showing us something about the concerns of the speaker, helps us begin to understand the primary concerns of Srimad Bhagavatam. Text 29. Now, 29.1. Now let us look at a verse that offers homage to the speaker of Srimad Bhagavatam and briefly defines the Bhagavatam's message by reflecting on the attitude of the speaker's heart. Okay. Swasuka nimbrita chetas tad vyudhastanya bhavo abhavo pya ajita ruchira lika krishta sharastariyam vyatanuta kripaya yastatva jipam puranam tam akila vrinjina grihnam vyasa shunum nato smi. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto Sukadeva Goswami, my spiritual master, the son of Vyas. It is he who defeats all inauspicious things within the universe. Although in the beginning he was absorbed in his own happiness of Brahman realization and gave up all other types of consciousness, he became attracted, Abhideya, by the pleasing, most melodious pastimes of Lord Ajita, Sambandha. He therefore mercifully broke this supreme spoke the supreme Purana, Srimad Bhagavatam, which describes the goal, Prayojana, and destroys obstacles to attraction. Because right. Here, most by the pleasing, most melodious pastimes of Lord Ajita, that's Sambandha, so the relationship, but also destroys obstacles in attraction, which is the presumed aspect of Sambandha. Right. In other words, what's going to get in the way of you being attracted? Because otherwise you hear about, but something can get in the way between Shankarshan, it still has to go into Prajumna, right? Because Shankarshan comes Prajumna Aniruddha. Right? So that aspect there. Srimad Bhagavatam 12.12.69. Baladeva Vidyabhushan observes that in addition to the Mangalacharana, which initiated this work, Srila Jiva Goswami here gives another to invoke auspiciousness before understanding this Pramaya section, right? Because it's a new section. So that was the invocation for that aspect to invoke auspiciousness. Now you're getting down to the what it is you want to present. So then he's doing it again. The author began the work, Anucheda 8, with a verse which indicated Krishna as the Sambandini, the subject of Bhagavatam, Bhakti as the Abhideya, and Prema as Prayojana. The author now quotes a verse from Bhagavatam describing Sukadeva with indications of his realizations of the same elements. Atta indicates auspiciousness. The verse indicates the heart of the speaker. The verse indicates that the heart of the speaker of the scripture was fixed only in the entire entity propounded by the scripture and in nothing else. Right, so the entity propounded is Krishna. Right? Once again, Jiva uses a Bhagavatam verse as his invocation. By quoting from Sutta Goswami, Prayers to Sukadeva, Jiva Goswami himself reveres Sukadeva Goswami to invoke his blessings, so that Jiva may present the purport of Srimad Bhagavatam without any deviation. From here, Srila Jiva Goswami has us consider the heart of the original writer, Srila Vyasadeva, and the heart of the speakers, Sukadeva Goswami and Sutta Goswami. Then he analyzes the text of the Bhagavatam in light of that examination, incontrovertibly establishing the purpose of the topmost praman. Because that's his specialty, is incontrovertibleness. That's what makes him, why Prabhupada says he's the greatest scholar in the, what words does he use? Contemporary age, and that's how many hundreds of years ago. So basically it's that he is the scholar. 29.2. Here is Sridhar Swami's commentary on this verse. He, Sutta Goswami, offers obeisances to a spiritual master. Swasuka nibrita cheta means he whose heart was full with his own happiness and who had therefore given up all feelings for, thoughts of, anything else. Even though he was in this state, his inner being, the gravity of his inner happiness, is deflected by the charming pastimes of Lord Ajita. I bow to him who expounded Srimad Bhagavatam, the light of the truth, the scripture that reveals the highest goal of life. Certain elements seem to be common here. The light of the truth, and it also is giving the way here. In other words, it's a standard preaching line. Bhavarta Deepika 12:12-69. 29:3. One should also see the three verses from the second canto in the same way. O King Parikit, mainly the topmost transcendentalists who are above the regular principles and restrictions take pleasure in describing the glories of the Lord. At the end of the Dwapara Yuga, I studied this great supplement of Vedic literature named Srimad Bhagavatam, which is equal to all the Vedas, from my father, Srila Dwaipayana Vyas. O saintly king, I was certainly situated perfectly in transcendence, yet I was still attracted by the delineation of the pastimes of the Lord, who is described by enlightened verses, Srimad Bhagavatam 2:17-9. In the verse under discussion, Swasuka Nibrita Chintas, the phrase, all inauspicious things, Srimad Bhagavatam 12:12-69, can be understood to mean everything contrary or irrelevant to Sukha's mentality. This verse indicates, therefore, that the truth with whom one should cultivate one's relationship is something greater than the bliss of Brahman. That truth, Sambandha Tattva, is Sriman Ajita, who is especially qualified by his charming pastimes. The trance of Sri Badarayana Vyas will show that this Lord is fully and literally realized by the name Krishna. So all inauspicious, what it means, contrary to or irrelevant to Sukadeva's mentality. So his mentality is pure devotion. So anything irrelevant or contrary to that, that's inauspicious. Right? Therefore, in the opening, then that's what's removed. The goal of human life, prayojana, is also described here. It is the joy of pure love for him, which strongly bonds one to him. From this we can infer the avideya, or process, for achieving this goal, namely the practice of worshipping him, which generates such pure love for him. That process includes such methods as hearing his pastimes. The phrase, quote-unquote, son of Vyas, in the verse implies, as we know from the Brahma Vaivarta Purana, that Sukadeva, by Sri Krishna's benediction, was free from his very birth from all the influence of Maya. Because that's the whole point. If he's going to come out, then he has to be free from any influence, right? You know, otherwise, he's not coming out. Like that. You know, that's just the way it is. You know, and you can't argue with it. Says, yeah, everybody says that. You know, but he's been there 16 years, right? You know, so it's like, you know, the Shatavari, you know, how you say, you know, the wind came, but it didn't matter. Like that. Like that. I think he also had another devotee like that. I don't know exactly the detail, but his name means he is known as Shatavari. Because when it was time to be born, that Shatavari wind pushes the baby out. Right? But he didn't go. He just sat there. So then I don't know how it was arranged that he, you know, decided to be born. So he had the desire, his prayer to the Lord was that everybody would be able to touch, you know, put their head on the lotus feet of the Lord, because that's the Pancharatrik rule, right? But the point is everybody's not qualified to go in the deity room and put their head on the deity's feet. So then the Lord gave what we know as the Shatari. You know, which is you that like crown with the Lord's shoes on top that then everybody comes and put on the head. That's by his mercy, you know, his desire that the Lord's mercy came in that form. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know. Nice. So in other words, those kind of persons seem to be a bit outstanding. You know. The verse under discussion was spoken by Sri Suta to Sri Shanaka. Sukadeva was an advanced Brahmavadi from birth. Even before hearing Srimad Bhagavatam from his father, his attraction to the pastimes of the Lord, therefore, are testament to the fact that Bhagavan realization yields happiness infinitely greater than that of the bliss of Brahman. The Bhagavatam is thus so potent that it can capture the heart of a Brahman-realized person, because actual Brahman-realized person
then they're on the transcendental platform, so they will appreciate transcendence. So it'll naturally attract them. Because if you're just sitting in transcendence and then there's some nice thing in transcendence, naturally it's going to be attractive. So therefore, the Maya bodies, they hear and they're not attracted, means they're actually not on the transcendental platform. Otherwise, they would be attracted. In the Brahma Vaivarta Purana and the Bhagavatam is recounted how Sukadev had renounced the material world while still in the womb. In fact, he stayed in the womb for 16 years, refusing to take birth. Finally, Vyasadeva had to ask his friend Sri Krishna to coax Sukadev into entering this world. Krishna came almost 1,000 miles from his capital, Dwarka, to the ashram of Vyas and promised Sukadev that if he agreed to come out of the womb, the deluding power of Maya would never touch him. Thus assured by the Supreme Lord, Sukadev took his birth, but then at once left home. Never quite works out, right?
And now he was like 16.
He was 16 already. Yeah. So, so you don't have no diapers, no nothing. You know, like the demigods. You know, so then Vyasadeva was just running after him. Oh, my son.
he just
took birth and ran off.
That's a little bit of an anticlimax after 16 years.
Yeah, what to do? That was how it worked, you know. In Sri Tattva Sandarbha describes in text 49, the measures to which Srila Vyasadeva resorted in order to entice Sukadev back home. Right? So that will be discussed later. In the next Anucheda, Srila Jiva Goswami begins analyzing the heart of Srila Vyasadeva. So one of the texts is an Anucheda then?
Yeah, in
Tathasandarbha. Okay. So when it says text 30, it's actually Anucheda 30.
Yes.
So that's why then it has part, you know, 30.1, 30.2, 30 like that. Okay. 30.1. We didn't read the summary. Okay. In order to accurately convey the meaning of a profound text like Srimad Bhagavatam, one must understand the faith and experience which guide the author's writing. In this Anucheda, Srila Jiva Goswami analyzes Vyasa's trance, which is the source of Srimad Bhagavatam, and reveals its essential idea. Vyasadeva's revelation of the Bhagavatam is described in the 7th chapter of the first canto, 174-11. Srila Jiva Goswami considers this passage essential. We're just starting, right? We just finished the 6th chapter. Right? Yes, so then we will be starting that.
Are we starting?
We just started the sixth. We finished the fifth.
Yes.
You thought you missed one. You were sleeping? Come on, we're on the eighth. Where have you been? Srila Jiva Goswami considers this passage essential for gaining a general preliminary understanding of the Bhagavatam subject, the absolute tattva, and he devotes a good part of Sri Tattva Sandarbha, Anuchedas 30 through 49, to analyzing these few verses. Sri Jiva Goswami dedicated the previous text, based on a single Bhagavatam verse, to reveal the contents of Sukadeva Goswami's heart. Now the next 20 Anuchedas, which spans 6 Bhagavatam verses, will analyze the inner purpose of Vyasadeva's heart and show how Sukadeva Goswami's heart perfectly reflects it. Because you need to establish this nicely, because then in the other 5 sandarbhas you're going to get into very, very detailed analyzation. Right? So we're studying this so we appreciate and understand the Bhagavatam itself, because the same thing is whether we're studying the sandarbhas, which is the thematic study, or we're studying the original work in its natural order of verses, then that same understanding is there. That's why we moved, even though the sandarbhas are in the next, in the Vedanta chakshus. Yes. It was moved down into Darshan chakshus so we could appreciate the actual study of Bhagavatam. Mm-hmm. Text 30.
30.1. The same purport of the Bhagavatam is also briefly specified in the description of Sri Badarayana's trance. Sri Badarayana, the earlier speaker of Srimad Bhagavatam, performed meditation to ascertain the truth, tattva, to be propounded in the book he was about to write. Thus he fixed his mind, perfectly engaged in it by linking it in devotional service, bhakti yoga, without any tinge of materialism. And thus he saw the absolute person along with his external energy, which was under his shelter, Srimad Bhagavatam 174. Due to this external energy, the living entity, although transcendental to the three modes of material nature, thinks himself a material product, and thus undergoes the reactions of material miseries. 175. The material miseries of the living entity, which are superfluous to him, can be directly mitigated by the linking process of devotional service, sadhana, sadhana bhakti. But the mass of people do not know this. And therefore, Vyasadeva compiled this Vedic literature, which is in relation to the Supreme Truth, Srimad Bhagavatam 176. When one simply gives oral reception to this Vedic scripture, the feeling for loving devotional service to Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, sprouts up at once to extinguish the fire of lamentation, illusion, and fear. Right. Right, so it says it sprouts up at once. Now, that's why then Lord Chaitanya is saying you have to protect that creeper, because that will then grow, penetrate the universe, go to Goloka and situate itself at the lotus feet of Krishna. And then, having situated itself there, then it will give fruits and flowers. Right? So, just by hearing, simply gives oral reception properly, then it's sprouted already.
Yes. Maharaj,
yes.
Here's an evidence for the traditional system of learning. The oral reception.
Yes. Okay. So in other words, we're, you know, the studying, the reading, and all these things are to back that up. Because even for us, because reading is oral reception. Mm-hmm. But the point is you have to hear like that. Mm-hmm. You can't just make it up. You know, you can't wing it. You've got to actually hear it from proper source. The great sage Vyasadeva, after composing the Srimad Bhagavatam and revising it, taught it to his son, Sri Sukadeva Goswami, who is absorbed in renunciation, Srimad Bhagavatam 178. So this is his meditation. So this is what we'll be studying basically for the next 20 anuchetas, right? So there's a lot of things in here. So much to be appreciated.
Yes.
Okay. Maybe we'll get into it. But he compiled it. You know, what are all the ideas? Then he revised it, put it into something, you know, more, you know, order that would be very nicely presentable, taught that to his son, right? And then his son in teaching it, and then Sutta in teaching it, then that is what we have as the documentation. Yeah. In the previous anucheta, Srila Jiva Goswami called Sukadeva the Bhagavatam speaker, Vakta, and here he calls Vyasadeva its original speaker, Pravakta. These roles are transcendental pastimes in which the Supreme has empowered these two great personages to reveal the perfect science of Krishna consciousness for our age. Only by their grace do we have access to the secrets of Bhagavad Dharma. So one might say, no, but Vyasadeva is the Supreme himself. But the point is here is the Bhagavatam is Sri Krishna, Swayam Krishna himself.
Yes.
Right, not Vishnu Tattva.
Yes.
You know, because Vyasadeva, we're not saying is Swayam Krishna. He never comes in any list as Swayam.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so that means that element will be Vishnu Tattva. So then, yes.
Maharaj,
he's saying
that Vyasadeva taught this to
Sukadeva
Goswami.
Yes.
So does he tell him that you are
going to
say this to
Parikshit,
or?
No, not necessarily. He might not. It doesn't really matter. The point is that the essence of the Bhagavatam is what we're looking for, the real purpose of that. Now, these elements of chronology and that are very much secondary. The point is this is transcendental. Because even you say, well, he spoke this here and he spoke that there. The Bhagavatam is always being revealed. It's always been there.
like that. And we, as we understand, it's actually a lot bigger. You know, we have what, you know, could be spoken in 7 days. But otherwise, it's a lot bigger. You know, so these are the essential aspects of the Bhagavatam, because all the Puranas together are 1 billion verses. Right? It means 10 million, right, times. It means, or, yeah, 10 million times 100. Right? So that's how many verses they have. So Vyasadeva simply gives the essence. Now the Bhagavatam, its whole entirety is always about pure devotional service. So this is how much we require to understand the philosophy, become attracted to Krishna and perfect our life. Like that. Greater than that is, you know, what, on that platform one can appreciate. But this is what's required to bring us to that platform. Right? And then having gotten to that platform, one goes back to Godhead, and then one will hear Bhagavatam unlimitedly, you know, eternally. So then it's not a problem. And so I don't think they really are worried about it. Does that make sense? Only by their grace do we have access to the secrets of Bhagavad Dharma, right? Because the Lord empowered them, they revealed it. So the point's there. It's just like Arjuna, he defeated all the great generals on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. You know, Krishna empowered him, but his point is he did it. So therefore, that's recognized. Because the point is otherwise, what's the meaning of pastimes? We can say, no, but Krishna did it, so actually they have nothing to do with it. That's tattva. But the point is that sweet? Is that attractive? No, it's the pastimes that are attractive. So that's the whole. Srila Vyasadeva revealed Srimad Bhagavatam on the basis of a vision he had of the Supreme Lord and his energies. Vyasa was qualified in several ways to enter into a state of total meditation, samadhi. He was free from whimsy because he was following a direct order from his spiritual master, Narada. His mind was pure, right, because that's what he was supposed to do. His mind was pure, amala, free from the material motives and attraction to sense enjoyment. And his mood in entering meditation was one of unalloyed devotion for the supreme bhakti yoga. Thus prepared, he was able to see the absolute truth directly in his heart and record this vision, Srimad Bhagavatam. Srila Jiva Goswami concludes that it was by the influence of Prema Bhakti alone that Srila Vyasadeva realized in his trance Bhagavat Tattva, along with Maya Tattva, Jiva Tattva, and Bhakti Tattva. In other words, he saw the original personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, along with his external, marginal, and internal potencies. How he determines this is Prema Bhakti. Is because, as mentioned in 177, only at that stage are, quote, lamentation, illusion, and fear, end quote, completely eradicated. 30.2. In the same passage, Shaunaka asked, Sri Sukadev Goswami was already on the path of self-realization, and thus he was pleased within his own self. So why did he take the trouble to undergo the study of such a vast literature? 179. To this, Sutta Goswami replied, though freed from all kinds of material bondage, those who take pleasure in the spirit self desire to render unalloyed devotional service unto the personality of Godhead. This means that the Lord possesses transcendental qualities and therefore can attract everyone, including liberated souls.
It's one of his qualities, isn't it? From the list, he attracts even liberated souls.
Yes. So, we have to remember is this Brahman platform, because it said, oh, you leave that and go to the next. No, Brahman is simply the situation of transcendence. Right? So just like, let's say someone is in a very nice place, that's a situation. But, you know, and so one can appreciate the situation, but if one can do something positive within that situation, that's even better. So it's not that one's given up for the other. It's just Brahman, instead of being a goal, is simply the state of existence. So everyone in the spiritual world is situated in existence, you know, of sat. But within that, they perform abhideya to please the Lord, prayojana. Right? So all three are there. So in other words, Brahman realization means you only have one of three, not that you move from one to two, two to three, and then the other two disappear. They're automatically already there. But because each one higher one is more inclusive, therefore it absorbs the last one. So Bhagavan means the other two are already absorbed in that. So it's not that you have to sit around. It's just you meditate on Krishna. Right? You already are in that state of doing everything only for Krishna. There is no mundane point.
If we serve Krishna, even for one moment, means we are at the Brahman platform.
Yes.
For one moment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Point is we're always on the Brahman platform, we just don't know it. That's the real point. That's what was coming out in the morning, the Bhagavatam study in the morning. The so-called material. Yes. Means the soul is always on the Brahman. He is Brahman, so how will he not be Brahman? But he thinks he's not.
Yes.
You know, like, you know, the guy down at the... Mm-hmm. You know, that white building that, you know, all the special doctors are at. He thinks he's Napoleon Bonaparte, right? You know, but he's not.
Phil.
Yeah, okay. As in Dr. Phil or something?
Could be.
Okay,
could be,
yeah, okay. Srila Sukadeva Goswami, the son of Srila Vyasadeva. Oh, you had something?
I just want to point out that this is the Amarama verse, which Lord Chaitanya describes in so many, 81 different ways.
Oh, very nice.
That's why we can speak on it for 20 verses.
Okay. Yeah, that's a very nice point.
That's an intent.
Right. So that's the point, is that the Atmarama, he is able to appreciate the other aspects of transcendence.
Yes.
So there is no such thing as being exclusively a monist. It just doesn't exist. Because the point is one might be a monist until one comes across activities in transcendence. And then one will immediately give it up. Because we have the example of Sukadeva and of the four Kumaras. Right?
There can't be any knowledge or intelligence in monism, exclusive monism.
No,
works on distinguishing.
It means they're using the mechanics of it, but it's not really being used nicely.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like that. Okay, so it's 5 o'clock. Thank you.
Good.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Śrīla Prabhupāda ki,
Jai
Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki,
Jai
Chaitanya Gaura.